So with the introduction, my name is Tomasz Wiśniewski. I work here in the Microsoft Polish subsidiary, and giving the mic next.
Hello again. You should know my name by now. I'm Dave Crawford. My specialty is design and UX and XAML as well.
My name is Jeff Bertoft, and my focus is web apps and Edge.
Everyone, my name is Shane Chahan, and my specialty is UWP.
My name is Vlad Kolesnikov, and my specialty is mixed reality and desktop bridge.
Yeah, hi everyone, Andy. I can answer stuff on UWP and cognitive services, AI, the AI bits of Azure.
Hi, I'm Etienne. I'm not on the slide because these guys don't like me. And my focus is web and cross-platform.
I'm Larry. My focus is Azure.
Okay, guys, don't be shy. Please stand up to the mic and ask your questions, whatever they may be. Okay, we have the first brave person.
Hi, my name is Mikoy. I work for Lionbridge. My question is, I like the packaging system you have shown us, like the install and click install, don't wait for the installation, run the application. When do you introduce that for the SQL, for the Visual Studio? Because it may happen that it installs a long time. That would be nice. Thanks.
Wait. So we currently already use it in Office. And actually, even Visual Studio does some stuff, but it's we're working on it, work in progress. We didn't like that feedback. Don't have a time, unfortunately.
Until like Visual Studio 17 installer.
It does work, but the Visual Studio 2017 installer is smaller, but yeah. It does work less.
Next.
So we saw a couple of ways of creating the cross-platform, cross-devices applications. And this is UWP, Web Apps, and Xamarin including into this. My question is that I'm kind of situation now that it would be hard for me to decide in which direction to go if I would like to create a cross-device, first of all, and then cross-platform application. So can you advise some algorithm on what would be the mind path in order to make the correct decision?
It's actually a really easy decision. Just always use web. And then everybody always use web, and then it's easy. Now, so the way that we approach cross-platform at Windows is we actually want to meet you where you are as developers. So if you're a C-sharp developer, if you're using .NET code in your projects, then Xamarin is the tool that is targeted for you. We want to make it really easy for you to be able to reuse the code you have, reuse the skills that you already have. If you are writing code for the web, then Progressive Web Apps is the technology that we want to support for you. There's a lot of different decisions that can back that up. It can be what kind of code do you already have that you want to reuse? What are your skill sets? What skill sets are easier to find in your country? If you've got a lot of C-sharp developers in Warsaw or in Poland as a whole, then you might want to go with that one. If you have more, if it's easier for you to hire JavaScript developers, then Progressive Web Apps might be that path. We're definitely not going to tell you you should go one way or another. We more want to see what's going to benefit you the most, and we're going to continue to support the technologies that developers want to use to reach cross-platform.
Hi, Alan Klimowski. I've got a quite similar question because in general, you made a big investment in XAML standard now. That was, well, honestly for me quite a shock, because I thought that it will be a bit passing down, maybe, I'm not sure. So my question is, in general, what's your stance on, well, this topic a bit more? Because, for example, we can see now the future probably will be, for example, web assemblies. So, for example, performance won't be the issue. Developing native apps, we can use, for example, React Native now. So it's really easy to use. So kind of the same question. Why and when we should use that, especially that I suppose we are going more and more to the web part of the world, let's call it.
Yep. So I'll start this off, and then if anyone else wants to jump in with some of the XAML standard stuff, you can. We know that there are a number of different projects out there that are investing in cross-platform app development. We hear more and more from developers and partners that we work with that the cost of developing for multiple platforms is continuing to grow, and they're looking for ways to reduce that. We're looking at those technologies, and we're actually investing in them on an early stage to see if they end up being one of those technologies that we want to put engineering time behind. So React Native is one of those that we're experimenting with to say, hey, can we work with Facebook to create a React Native that spits out a UWP? It's also one of those things. I mean, we have a first-class JavaScript app platform. A lot of partners right now are just using React.js on our platform, and it spits out a native-ish app for Windows. As far as like XAML standard, that's just an area that we continue to build on top of the .NET standard that we did that was got great feedback from developers because it allowed for portability of code. Enabling portability of your XAML code as well is a step to build on top of that to make platforms even more interchangeable.
Yeah, so I'll talk to a bit about the XAML standard piece. So I think the key thing here is it was about protecting your investment. You know, we have a lot of XAML developers out there, and we also know Xamarin has their own version of XAML. And you know, things like, I think in the keynote you mentioned things like the stack layout panel and the stack panel. And you know, just those small things when you're doing these cross-platform apps gets kind of tricky and you're trying to work out which ones are which. What we're really trying to do here is just try and standardize that as much as possible. So you're not having to worry about the nuances between the two. Instead, you write your XAML once, so to speak. But if your skill set is in XAML, that's a great benefit. If your skill set isn't in JavaScript, then maybe you'd look elsewhere for the other technologies. But that's where we are. Actually, today at the moment, the XAML standards is still in a specification state. So it's still looking for feedback on what works for people and what doesn't. So definitely have a look at it and see if it works for you now, and then also propose things that you'd like to see, because up until you do without that feedback, the XAML standard won't really be something you want to adopt until you're 100% happy with where it is. Yeah.
Yeah, we've had that question before, like, hey, what about XAML for WebAssembly? I can tell you, WebAssembly is very early on, and we're excited to be part of it. We're excited to work on the standard with some of the other folks in the community. But to be at a place where we'd say, well, we're going to port XAML onto WebAssembly, it's just way too early to even look at that right now. Good question, though.
Hello, my name is Konrad Disput, and I have one question about JavaScript services. What is current state of JavaScript services in ASP.NET Core? And to Tomasz's presentation, did you use JavaScript services as an attribute to talk with Node.js at Azure?
So I can talk a very high level about Core. Is there anybody else who wants to jump there? Okay, so we know that ASP.NET developers are building modern applications just like those on Node.js. So one of the things that we are doing in ASP.NET, which runs on top of Core, is now including modern templates like React.js and Ember architecture so that out of the box, you can start a new application with a JavaScript framework and do a single page application. As far as where that goes into, I think you're asking about Node.js.
But what about using some kind of modules, some kind of functions in Node.js? I have small problem with microphone, okay. In ASP.NET Core, what is the current state of using modules like Tomasz used in his presentation. It is available now. What is current state of using JavaScript services?
Maybe someone else can talk more to that, because I know that NPM can be used to load modules in ASP.NET. I don't know to the point where it is still pre-release or if it is in the release versions yet or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, sorry about that.
We have support for Node as part of Azure Functions, if that's what you're asking. That's what, Tom, I believe you were probably showing.
Well, the demo itself, it was pure ASP.NET and C#. Yes, just on the slide, we had a version of the same code written in Node.js. So the demo was not using Node.js itself. It was using standard ASP.NET.
But you run some kind of function in Node.js by using ASP.NET. Yes?
No, you're in the function runtime at that point.
Yes, yes. The function is just C#. It wasn't Node.js. You can write the function in C# or Node.js. It wasn't like from the ASP.NET you were running some Node.js function. It was this or this. So it's two separate worlds.
Okay.
For that matter and for that demo.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, there was a question first.
Okay. My name is Piotr Skinger, and I'm from Krakow. And my question is about the devices that you mentioned in sense of universal Windows platform, because we have to support software for warehouse terminals, and it's work on Windows CE version 5 is most common. The system on this terminal. And the question is how we have to do this, because the servers go further and further, and our terminal have to connect with the server and use the remote desktop. And when you try to connect with Windows CE with server with 2016 version, I think, it starts to be a problem and run the application from the server on the terminal, like we use it right now. So it will be another version for this kind of devices of Windows, some kind of universal Windows, Windows 10 or something like that. Or you just leave it this part of market and it will be taken by Google Android.
Yeah, we're going to answer the best as we can. Do you want to first? Okay, well, so when we look at like embedded devices, that's one of the big pushes between Windows 10 on IoT. It's a different, obviously a different platform than Windows CE is, but it's targeted for the same type of things. So that you, if you have devices with significantly lower resources than what you have on the desktop, or you need a device that runs a single activity, Windows on IoT is made for that. And the idea is that you can take the same UWP app and run it across that as well.
Yeah, but the problem is that you cannot buy on the market the warehouse terminal for scanning barcode on the warehouse with Windows CE IoT. The producers don't produce terminal with that kind of system. So this is the problem. Will you try to cooperate with Motorola or Zebra to create some kind of this terminal? Because the Zebra and Motorola start to produce terminals with Android. And this is the problem for our company, because we have to change our the main thing that we live from, the software on the terminal. We have to change the system from Windows to Android. And this will take up much resources for us. And the question is, do we have to do this, or we can still wait for terminals with Windows CE, even IoT, we can manage this. But do we have to wait, or we have to prepare for changes to Android?
So basically, if you're talking about this embedded kind of devices, there is a Windows IoT, there is also a new Windows 10 embedded systems available. And you can actually go and buy it. Probably not from Motorola. This is the thing. Like if you used to work with Motorola, and now they only sell Android, That's maybe the problem. If you look around for other systems available, then you will find the Windows devices. Eventually, there will be more and more with Windows, and you can start using them, and they will support all the capabilities that you require from this kind of system, such as like locking on the apps, the way it boots, the way it limits the capabilities of like that available to the user, right? It's like the warehouse terminals usually do. And like this is what we're aiming for. Did I answer your question? Yeah, and obviously, in your particular case, we can take it offline. So you just follow up with us directly, and we can help you. Thank you.
Okay, so one more question. I should, of course, ask, as always, on a conference in Poland, when we will get Cortana in Poland. That's the obvious question, but I'll change it a bit. The more interesting thing for me is, what are the plans with Windows 10 false update? What will you do with that, for example, in countries like Poland? Because as far as I can see, it's, well, quite based on the, well, on Cortana, on the integration with Cortana. That's, well, not available in many countries. What are the plans for using, for example, the timeline, going back to the last used app, and so on?
So Cortana is a whole collection of services. So when you talk about Cortana, you're kind of talking about the speech-enabled, the personal digital assistant. And that does require a whole bunch of cloud services. It requires knowledge about the local market. It needs to have language understanding. And so we hear a lot of requests for it to be rolled out. And obviously, we would love it to be rolled out as fast as it can be. But there's a lot of work that has to go into opening up the personal digital assistant to different markets. But that being said, things like Windows Timeline, though Cortana itself is, you can think of as a whole collection of services, and some of those individual services we can roll out independently of the full Cortana experience. So it doesn't mean that because you don't have Cortana yet, you won't be seeing things like Timeline.
Okay, so in general, you say that even we don't have Cortana, we've got only the search bar. You will get like the push messages to get back to the point where we were. Because Cortana, well, if you won't configure with English your system and blah, 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 you don't have it at all, nothing, only the search bar.
So yeah, I see what you're saying. We showed how it moves over to the phone, and we use Cortana to pick up where we left off, and you're saying if Cortana isn't there. So I don't know the answer. We can't give you a defined answer. Unfortunately, none of us are really, you know, experts on the localization of Cortana. I will be able to tell you, though, that what we showed today is an implementation of the Microsoft Graph, which is, as Andy is saying, is much bigger than Cortana. So the not having one independent piece does not mean that the Fall Creators Update will not be able to deliver new and exciting functionality across the board. Right, there's more roaming experiences than just Cortana. I mean, we showed with the Swift keyboard today, which I don't know if that's available here or not, but my understanding, it's fairly global. So, you know, we'll that's right. And the fact that your applications that developers build, especially targeting specific locales like Poland, can utilize the Microsoft Graph as well to be able to deliver those features from app to app. So that's the information we can give you today. Unfortunately, we can't give you the level of detail that you're looking for.
So I have two questions connected with Azure Automation. First one, when I use a partial desired state configuration and push module, it works fine for Windows virtual machines, but I'm not able to work with virtual machine set. And do you plan to add this in the nearest future? And my second question is about NX module for PowerShell DSC. Do you plan to enable in Azure automation work with a Linux virtual machine using the PowerShell DSC? Because now it's available and it works.
So you were asking about virtual machine scale sets. I heard we have a little bit of problem with sound. Didn't quite catch your whole question.
Sorry. I meant that when I create a PowerShell disaster configuration, I can add, in Azure Automation, I can add a Windows machine.
Right.
And push that configuration and machine will pull that. But I am not able to add a virtual machine scale set, only a single virtual machine. So it's a pain in the neck for me because we're working in Service Fabric. So only way to do that is using the templates and move the centralized configuration into the template,
right,
and republish that. And second question is about NX module. Running a disaster configuration on a Linux machine. Do you wanna to?
Yeah, this is a pretty detailed question. Why don't we talk afterwards and I can get your email and we'll connect on it. But with regard to Service Fabric, I mean we're always working on improving the features, and there are certain places where some features are available for Windows and maybe not for Linux virtual machines yet. And definitely with regard to that, we're seeking out to get to as much parity as possible. So I know I'm not answering your question in total right now, but let's talk afterwards.
Okay, thanks.
Don't fight, guys, don't fight.
Okay.
Just one question, just one ask for you. Please talk straight to the mic because otherwise we cannot hear you very good.
Okay, I have a question to Andy. You shown very nice cognitive services APIs, but if we have a more complex case, what would you recommend? To use the custom vision API or use something more sophisticated like CNTK, Cognitive Toolkit, or TensorFlow, or other neural network frameworks? And second question is, do you plan to provide the low priority Azure batch jobs for machines with GPU?
Okay, so your first question, you answered it yourself, really. The cognitive services, you saw in my demo with the basic image recognition service, the V1. So we've been building out our AI services very rapidly and adding more capability all the time. So we started off with the kind of generic service that's smart but not super smart. You know, it's like, okay, we showed it a rhododendron leaf and it said, yeah, that's a leaf. You know, well, that's great.
So this
and then the custom services are there specifically to allow you to use your own data to create something that is customized to your specific scenario. So you get more involved in the classification, you put the tags in, you can use it to create services that recognize your particular area of the application better.
So these services are to start the project very fast, and then if we want, we can customize it with other frameworks, yeah?
So if the generic service doesn't do what you want, then you can look at the custom services. If that still isn't giving you the kind of fine control, yeah, then the Cognitive Services Toolkit, the CNTK, is designed. I mean, obviously, it's like every time you go down the chain, you know, you end up writing more, doing more work, and that's the nature of these things. So that's how it really is set up. So yeah, you're exactly right. You drop down to more detailed services if you need that kind of control.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, first question about application insights. Is there any chance that the time between error
and the view in application inside can be reduced to less than 4 minutes.
We're always working to improve the latency. So yes. Absolutely working on it. I don't have a timetable to give you.
Okay, second question on the first or the second session, you show something like the bug in show an error in Visual Studio. Do I have to have a preview version of Azure or something because I cannot see it in my portal? Do I have to make some special configuration? Upload symbols, I don't know.
So I think you have to upload symbols, but we can check afterwards. Can you show me that today? Yeah, do you have your sure. computer? Okay, we can have a look.
And the third question about, sorry.
You lied.
You okay, said warning.
Go back.
Guys, if you have questions, please form a line. It will just go faster and it will be just easier for us to facilitate. So if you have questions, just please stand in line in front of the mics and that will be great.
Okay, I have a more general question about the future of desktop application. So the UWP seems to be the main platform you are engaged in, but we still have Win32. And in some scenarios, some use cases, we still have to use Win32 because of the broader APIs and capabilities on the lower layers of the system. So what's the future of desktop application development? So will we be able to use UWP to do some more advanced stuff that now requires Win32?
Yes, if I understood your question correctly, yes, you'll still need Win32 apps for certain things, obviously depending on what API calls you're doing. At the same time, we know that some of you still have users on Windows 7 too, so it does make sense to still write your WPF apps and your Win32 apps there. So that's perfectly fine too. I think if you're asking about can I do more lower level API calls in UWP, we're always investing in the platform. So yes, that's definitely something we're interested in doing too. I think in one of the sections I mentioned, we have the open roadmap too. So if there's anything in particular that you're after, then you should definitely go and have a look at that. See if it's in our roadmap, and if not, provide feedback there too, because that's very important. And I'll pass over to Jeff, because he's pointing at me as well. So I think that's my stance on it.
I would add to that there's two things to consider. Is the desktop bridge is there to help you make that transition from Win32 to UWP. And it also allows you to then incorporate some of the newer APIs that are only in UWP into your application that's Win32. iTunes is a great example that we showed this morning of a very legacy Win32 application that is rewritten to work inside of UWP and take advantage of some of those APIs. So I think there's a really great path for you that doesn't leave you out of the picture of being able to utilize all the newest APIs with your Win32 app. As we in the background are working to deliver even more and more of that API layer into UWP. What's that? Yeah, and take advantage of store distribution with your Win32 app as well, so.
Okay, so I have a question about the corporate use of Windows 10S. Mainly about Windows 10S and corporate use of Windows 10S laptops. The main question is, can I upload app to the store so only my organization can see it? So some kind of internal app store focused on an organization, or should I push my application to the public?
First option. So the Windows Store for Business is what you're talking about here. So what you can do is you can actually go and upload your apex directly to the store as an organization. So at that point, then you can manage it through your usual MDM solutions, whether it's your enterprise or whether you're an ISV supplying to an enterprise. You can control that however you want. And what happens is when the user launches the store, there'll be an additional tab for their particular organization, and then you can manage which people can see which apps internally within that store. So it's all closed and it's not public.
Okay, so it's...
Close to the mic.
Okay, so it's also divided by the position in an organization, or...?
Yeah, you manage it like you do a normal MDM solution. So what happens is you link your account to your local MDM, and then you can say, well, if you're in marketing, you would see these apps or sales and these apps, and the same where the store would also have roles for you as the developer. So then only you have permissions to go and upload the app, but you necessarily can't see the financial details of how well the app's doing or something like that. So there's two sort of roles there, but there's one, the organizational, which that you can control as an org, and there's also one with account access to the store, and again, that can be controlled too.
Okay, so the last thing with this topic, when will Microsoft present a new mobile phone?
We said one question. Yeah, next question.
No, so we can take you the, as far as on mobile front, we're continuing to build Windows 10 out for mobile as well as our desktop and other platforms. Right now we've got partners who are building Windows Phone and doing a fabulous job of it. As far as new information about Microsoft's mobile hardware plan in the future, we have absolutely no new information to share today.
Thank you.
Hi, so I'm Mateusz, and I have a question about this desktop bridge and ability to run app during an installation. And my question is, is there any additional work I need to do to get advantage of this, or is it fully automated process? If yes, how is it know what should be installed first?
So you're asking about if you can run a certain application once it's installed or during the installation?
I mean during, that you could in fact run an app during an installation, how it was shown in presentation.
Yes, you can leverage that. It's basically, if it was the same like Shen demoed, right? Yes, you can totally utilize it today. Is it like streaming?
Yes, but I mean, is there any additional thing I need to do to get advantage of this? Or
yes.
Is
so you can mention, there's I didn't show it on the demo, but there's actually, when you're building it out, there's actually an extra XML file, and you can actually specify, you know, the order in which things should go and which things you should stream install and which things you shouldn't. So to make sure my demo is generally successful, I always have, you know, some of them have a lower priority. Otherwise, it gets kind of awkward. But yes, you can do that.
Okay. Thanks.
The second part. Hi, guys. A couple of questions about the Logic Apps. Can you plug in like App Insights into the Logic App so you don't have to look from every component if you have a ton of them, so you can see what's going on in your workflow? And the second, is there a wait all component if you have multiple entries and then you want to wait for all of them to finish? Sort of like task wait all in C Sharp.
So you're specifically asking about, is Applications Insights available for Logic Apps?
Yeah, out of the box. So I don't have to, I can do custom logging from every, you know, part of the workflow, but can I just, hey, log in all the shit from it and like an entry and out status of each of the component in the logic flow?
Yeah, I'm afraid we don't know the answer off the top of our head, but we can look into it for you.
And about the wait all, is there a component to wait for all the inputs to finish? Like an orchestration part, you know?
Yeah, I believe you can do that with Logic Apps. You're simply setting different event conditions on the execution of the next piece.
What about Expression Studio? Next generation will be continued? Expression Studio, the next generation will be continued or not? Oh,
expression. You're talking about
expression
Blend?
Studios. Blend is part of
it. I knew you'd give this to me. So I've used Blend since the very beginning, and I love Blend. We still ship Blend with Visual Studio. It's changed slightly from how it used to look. As far as I'm aware, we haven't announced any roadmap around Blend. It's something that I use every day, so I certainly want it to continue. And that's what I tell the product team. I recommend that you leave your feedback, that you love it and you want it to continue, and you can join my army of people who want to keep Blend alive. Sorry. And it's also, Shen just told me, it's actually still in Visual Studio 2017, so that's promising. We're seeing a lot more convergence between Blend and Visual Studio. There are still some things you can only do in Blend right now, such as the Visual State Manager, the timeline and the storyboard stuff. I've not seen that on the roadmap for Visual Studio, unless you guys know any different. So as far as I'm aware, it's going to be around for a bit longer still. Have we answered every question in Poland?
I have a question about XAML standard. From what I have seen on presentation, I understand that during merge of Xamarin Forms and XAML from UWP, Xamarin Forms will be evolving more into XAML UWP and not the other way around. I mean that if right now I'm writing software using UWP and XAML, then in XAML standard, I would use Xamarin Forms the same way.
I would say go to the standard that we have on GitHub, and you tell us which version you want to see. It's not that there is a one merging into the other. There's a standardization of the library across the two. We're still working on exactly what that'll mean, and I joke, but in all actuality, we really do need you all, XAML developers, to go and give us feedback on what your most important things are, what you think works better in one version of XAML than the other, so that we know what to focus on and what should be the base of the standard.
Hi there, I'm Mark. Nice to see you. I have one question and maybe second, if there won't be no one behind me. So the first question is, are there any plans for a 3D control for Xamarin? I know we have Unity, but building UI in Unity is, we know what it is. So that's why I'm asking.
There is a 3D control for Xamarin. If you look at the Urho 3D engine, and Urho, like Xamarin Urho as it is, it's URHO engine. They have controls for Xamarin Forms, and it's supported across many platforms, including UWP. And it's actually quite a good engine, and it's a lot lighter than Unity. And it supports C#, and it's quite performant because the core is written on C++, and it supports OpenGL ES on the mobile platform, and supports DirectX on UWP. And yeah, this is basically what Unity is, and they have controls.
Nice. I will come to you for the specific name
okay.
because it sounds hard. And the second question is about the Azure stack. Is it required to have a website, or you can also use it inside your UWP application somehow? Because I'm not fully aware where is it located, either behind the REST API or on the application side.
But do you mean Azure Stack, Azure Functions?
I mean, you've mentioned the company which cached information on their ships when they were...
Right.
Yeah.
So Azure Stack is an appliance device that you run in your own data center.
Oh, right.
And you have the ability to host Azure services on premises. And it supports a number of different, a wide variety of different Azure services, including web applications, you name it, quite a few of them right now.
So to make more concrete question, what was the specific use case on that ship? Did they had like a small data center on the ship, which was?
They had hardware on their ship, yeah.
All right, okay.
So that actually running Azure Stack.
All right, yeah, okay. That's what I've been missing. All right, thank you.
Hi, Hello, my name is Leandro. I have a question regarding cognitive services, specifically the custom APIs. So currently when we add new images so that we add new tags, for example, we are expanding already what is offered by Azure, or are we overriding?
So when you, you're providing data that's going to help our algorithms to learn and develop this model. So you're creating an app in the cloud. And what you're doing when you supply the images and tagging them, you're giving it the initial classification. And it's then using our, like the image classification algorithm, it's using that, its way, our algorithms for recognizing what an image represents, and it's associating it with the tags that you're supplying. So what you're doing is you're helping to train this so that it will then know when it sees a similar image, it can classify them accurately and make the correct decisions about it. And actually, I've just realized one thing I forgot to show in the demo this morning is that there's also a really good feature in all of these services that as your users use your services and they supply images that the system's never seen before, the cloud service will try and match them up against the data it already has in its model. And if it's really sure about it, like the 96% that it was a rhododendron, then it just lets that through. But for those that it's kind of, I'm not so certain about this, it's only like a 50% accuracy matching. What it does is it puts them up on the website as predictions, and you can come along every so often. You can look at the predictions, and it'll have images on there, and it'll say, "Okay, I thought this was 50% likely to be a fern, and it was 25% to be a Japanese cherry, and I'm not really sure." And then you can go and tag these additional images yourself to say, "Oh no, actually, that was a Japanese cherry." And then you can retrain your model. So this way, over time, your model improves with accuracy. The data that the whole service is drawing on becomes bigger, and it actually improves over time. And it's learning. You've got this kind of wonderful feedback loop where it's learning from real-world usage of your service. So this is, you kind of give it the initial data set to get started, and then you keep on iterating. You keep on working with it as people use it in order to improve its performance. Does that answer your question?
Yes. If I can ask two more questions. For example, a specific use case. For example, I had some images which are pants, and they are coming tagged as trousers. I would like all of them to be tagged as pants. Would I be able to make that kind of translation using a custom service?
Yeah, so you can create, the tags that you create are entirely up to you. So you could tag a whole series of trousers as pants and it would come through and say, yeah, I'm 96% sure these are pants, yeah. So you have quite a lot of control in how things are classified, and you have to be a wee bit careful because it does draw also on its own knowledge, like the language understanding. When you create, you enter in phrases, for example, with a language understanding service, you give it lots of examples, and it uses those as guides, but it's not an absolute, it's not an exact pattern match, it's smarter than that. It's using its understanding of the domain where it's created. So a lot of our services are in preview, and you create them with specific locales. So obviously a US-based recognition service would know all about pants, and it would kind of, that would make that a bit more accurate in that domain. So you have to be a bit careful when you start fighting against cultural trends in a particular area. But in general, you have a lot of influence over how things are classified.
And I'm sorry if I missed, is the service already available now, the custom? And if it incurs additional cost to the usage of the cognitive services API?
So first of all, these services are in preview at the moment, so they're not on general availability just yet. And so that also limits the locations, the data centers where they're running. In terms of the cost, all of them are kind of on a basic pricing model based on your usage. And if you go and have a look on Microsoft.com/AI, you can get some examples of pricing. But it's very modest. If you're up to sort of 10,000 API calls, you know, a month, it's a trivial cost. So overall, we aim to be very competitive with other offerings, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised about the reasonable cost of using these services.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. A question about the training mechanism in the what you were showing. Is there the ready-to-use application to train the artificial intelligence engine, or is this something I need to write by myself, like image recognition, finding the spots and deciding this is the leaf and this is the cat, or is there out-of-the-box solution that I can just batch upload like the 100 leaves and to use this in my application?
So what you're doing when you are training, you're providing a set of data and you're labeling it. And the algorithm, we've created that. So the clever stuff in the cloud using this deep neural networks and all this sort of thing, this is these hotshot computer scientists have created this sort of thing. And really, we create these services so that you and me, you know, average developers, if you like, don't have to worry about that. You don't have to go in and write the really clever stuff. So you train it by labeling and by providing samples. The more samples you can give it, the better. And yes, absolutely, you could upload a very large data set. They have to be labeled, of course, so a labeled data set. Same with language. You can upload a huge number of utterances to a language service model, and that in that way you are training, you're giving it sufficient data to identify accurately the kind of images or the kind of language or whatever that is going to be sent to it in real life. So yeah, you don't have to worry about the algorithm. That's done for you, and we kind of make this as easy as possible to get started to create customer services. If you know to go deeper, we have services. We have the cognitive toolkit, but you're getting into you need a lot more problem domain knowledge, a lot more AI knowledge in order to be successful with that. So the cognitive services make things easier.
Great. Just to specify what you were talking.
Oh, I'm sorry. So. Vlad's just pointed out that I didn't answer the question. So can you automate that learning process? Yes, there are APIs to actually supply the sample data and feed that up. And you can cause a training of your model to happen programmatically. Yeah.
Okay, great. And the question to ask, the question is how much data, in the example of the leaf recognition, how much data should I provide, like 10 images or more like 1,000 images to get this running?
That depends.
Yeah.
So it depends on how fine-tuned your model needs to be and how smart it needs to be. So our advice is to get started, you need to supply a couple of dozen, so, you know, 20, 30 sort of images. That particular demo I showed you, I think it has about 100 in or so. But the more, it depends on how fine-grained the recognition needs to be, and that really influences how much training data you need to supply.
Just one more quick question about this, still the same topic. Can I make the hierarchy of the objects I want to recognize? Like, this is the leaf in general, and this is the rhododendron. Well, I can't imagine any further hierarchy, but you know what I mean.
So the important thing to know here is you can put multiple tags on your training data. So when you get the results back from the API, it gives you percentages of how confident it is that specific tags have been identified. So you get all that information back in the response from your API call. So you can look at those and make decisions in your code about how you interpret the result that's come back.
Yeah. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Hi, my name is Dominic. I have one more question about this recognition. You told that you can give more images, like thousands, to make the network better and even smarter. But will this, this thousands of images, will not this provide the problem of memorizing the answers from the neural network?
They're very smart. They're big systems. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I, to be honest, I can't really answer that. But it, certainly, the more data we give, the better. And these systems are designed to scale. They, this, the beauty of these AI services and why the time for them has really come is that big cloud vendors like Microsoft, we've got these massive networks of computers in the cloud. We've got massive computing power. We've got these really sophisticated algorithms. And this allows us to create these very intelligent cloud services that are really easy for you as developers to call. But what happens up there to do all this? Certainly thousands of images is not going to cause it a problem. It's designed to scale and to handle very high throughput. So you don't need to worry about that.
One thing, if I can, as I understand this correctly, we are providing training sets only, yes? Do we provide validation sets also or not?
So you're providing data to train the model, and that is used to create the actual app that is doing the recognition, yeah.
Okay, so
but you get the live data comes through and in the predictions bit as well that I mentioned before.
Okay, thank you.
I have one more maybe philosophical question about the future of app development. We have a great presentation today about progressive web apps versus native development. What do you think in general about it? What's the future? Tell us.
Well, I'll say it again. I mean, the future's web, isn't it? I thought that was pretty obvious when I was done with my session. I mean, everyone clapped. I just assumed we were on the same page. Trust me, the future is not written yet, and there is a lot of space in the application sphere for more than one approach to technologies. We do see things like XAML standard, which is making it even easier in Xamarin Forms to be able to write a common UI, which was an advantage that the web used to have over using Xamarin or an approach like Xamarin in the past. But then we also see service workers, which gives us the ability to control network traffic and have web apps that work offline, which used to be an advantage that was reserved just for native applications. So we start to see some of those benefits, the gaps closing between the two, but then there's just also new characteristics that arrive in each of those code bases that bring unique benefits to them. So I don't anticipate that we're going to see a battle where one wins out over the other. I anticipate that they're both going to continue to develop and provide more and more functionality and value for us as developers, and we'll continue to need choices because we'll have applications and needs that are based on different things.
And I'd say also things like bots and conversational apps, you know, and the being able to have applications that interact through speech and recognition and using the cloud services to do language and natural language interaction. There's a whole tidal wave of new stuff coming, and as Jeff says, there are going to be different solutions in different areas.
What we call an app today may not be what we think about when we say app 10 years from now.
I have one question, maybe. What is the future of mixed reality on Windows 10? Because we saw only a Google HoloLens, and it's not so similar to Google Glass. You just cannot wear it and go walk around because they are quite heavy and not practiced. So there will be another project like HoloLenses with more smart glasses or augmented reality glasses. Or this is the end of the story, just HoloLenses and that's it.
So, as you might see, HoloLens, from the technology perspective, is a lot smarter than Google Glass, right? So it has an ability to understand the the reality, and this is the difference between augmented reality and mixed reality. Obviously, HoloLens will continue evolving, and it's always a matter of the balance between hardware as it is today and the our desires and our vision and our imagination of what we want to build. Obviously, everything will continue to evolve, including our competitors' products. But so far, HoloLens is the most advanced device on the market. Like there are some that they claim they're developing, but
But do you work on another version of HoloLens, or right now it's not the question?
We have nothing to share so far from the roadmap perspective. We continue working on the entire range of our devices, both on see-through devices and occluded devices. And you see, it's not just us; it's also our partners. If you're talking about the recent announcements of mixed reality devices, so yes. And if you ask about the future as we see it in the short term is about you creating the content for existing mixed reality devices, and especially for those that are coming out by the end of this year.
Okay, thank you.
Don't really believe I'll get an honest answer to my question, but decided to try. How are the topics for such conference chosen, and also the contents of each topic once the topics are decided?
The content of each of the topics, you said?
Yes, okay. And the content.
Well, one of the things that we do is we had the first Build conference in San Francisco, which has hundred sessions in Seattle. And we then get feedback directly from the developers who attend that conference as to what's most important to them. And so we turn that developer feedback around and say, all right, let's take the best of that session, and some of the sessions that we have here are a combination of a couple of them that we did at the large conference, and then we take that on the road to try to make sure that you all have a chance to see those highlights in a single day. And then also, we also look at the conferences and these as a way for us to connect directly with you. That's one of the benefits of going to a conference is you meet other developers who are working on the same technologies. You get to meet some of the people who are working on building those technologies. So we want to make sure that we go to the different countries so we can actually connect with the developers here and understand what your needs are and what your
things are. I'd like to add to that too. It ties into a higher level question, which is around what is our developer platform and where do we focus? Because obviously we can't boil the ocean. We don't want to build our platform along every single area of software development. That'd be far too many things for us to focus on. Here we're doing a day of content, so we have to really, really focus on what do we think are the most interesting and compelling things that we're offering today for developers. And we're trying to relate that to you in a single day, which is a really monumental task. But just given that, we focus on where we think the most exciting developments are, where we think we want to make sure you hear about what we talked about at the Build conference. I mean, this is the same as the thing that goes on with the Build conference, right? As we prepare the Build conference, we try to whittle down to 3 days what are the most important software developer topics based on the platforms that we're developing. And it's the same question here. This is a summary of that. This is an attempt to whittle that down. And as Jeff says, we're always trying to listen. Part of what we're doing here is we want to listen to you about the things you're trying to accomplish. What are the problems you're trying to solve with software development? Because fundamentally, it's not about the features or functions or APIs. It's about solving a real-world problem with software. And so we need to hear those things from you guys, and that's why we're here.
Okay,
When you say we, do you have in mind that each department lead or whatever, inside each department you take a decision, or you have some cross departments company board that is basically sitting and deciding together?
We all coordinate. I mean, we talk amongst the different divisions of Microsoft around software development, and we focus on putting the Build conference on as a collaboration, so.
Okay.
I'm breaking my own rule by adding something to an existing question, but it's an existing answer. The other thing we did for this particular build tour is that we asked each city we were visiting to let us know what was most important to you guys, so we could run one session on that in particular. In this case, it was Tomasz's session. So we actually reach out to Poland and say, hey, what do you guys want to hear about? And it was serverless, so we put on a session for that. So we actually do listen to country-specific feedback as well.
Okay. And one very quick question. Is web apps already available for iOS?
So one of the things about progressive web apps is that they are the more functionality that's available, the better they're going to work. So the question is, to what degree are web apps available on iOS? iOS does not support the manifest or service workers yet. So they have some other ways to do pinning and things of that sort. What you can find if you go to the PWA builder that we showed, we actually have a polyfill package that you can use on iOS so that you can still base it off of the manifest. No service worker support yet, but we have a polyfill to kind of fill the gap until they are ready to release those things, which we don't know, unfortunately. They don't give us dates.
So guys, any more questions? Don't be shy.
I have a question from Desktop Bridge apps basket, because right now, if we take classic Win32 apps and use this bridge to deploy it to the store, obviously we only can use it on PC. But Microsoft, announced this year that full version of Windows will be ported and published on ARM processors. And do that mean that this kind of apps would also be available in other kind of devices, I mean on ARM processors?
So the short answer is yes for some of them. It's not going to be like a straight process, but we are trying to...
I'm not asking about the Witcher.
To make it as easy as possible.
So one other thing, though, maybe not exactly a question, but a comment. I think that you should consider allowing people from other countries than where Cortana is officially available to, let's say, go into the settings and check some check that, yes, I want to run it without changing your region and messing all the others things which are connected to it.
Yeah, I'm sure there is an item on that on user voice. You can go and vote for that.
Unfortunately, there is, but that option is still not available.
Hi, I've got a question about what you have shown on the keynote. I mean, the Bash integration with Windows 10. Is it actually running the full version of Ubuntu, or is it in some way restricted?
So it is a Linux running on top of Windows. It's the actual calls. Now, we don't restrict it. However, not the entire API surface is available. So I don't know what the current percentage of calls that are there versus not there. However, I can tell you we started over a year ago with that, and it was quite limited when we first released, but developers gave us feedback immediately. There was still a lot of value, so we've continued to build it over the year. Around the beginning of the year, we actually had developers porting new distros on top of the Linux library, so that shows you the high percentage of recovery that was there, that developers could actually port new distros, which is now what we're picking up on some of the work that our community developers did to release new distros as well. So the coverage is quite high, but it's not 100% complete.
Okay, I have already installed this today to check it out, and I noticed that there is a great integration of files. So when I create a file in this Ubuntu system, I can see it normally via the Windows system. What is the penalty here when those files are shared? Is it some kind of Samba or some other kind of connection?
So if I understand what your question is, their Linux file system is an emulated file system on top of the Windows system. And we did that on purpose because we wanted to make sure that from the bash shell, you could easily access both Linux files in the traditional directories that you would anticipate they would be in, and even a lot of the, like when we do an apt-get install and things like that, there's certain directories that components expect to be there to utilize, so we needed to have that in place. But we also wanted to make it very easy for you to open and access files on the traditional Windows file system. So we built it that way on purpose to be as flexible as we could from within the bash. We were not necessarily concerned with you being able to use, for example, PowerShell to be able to access files that were created in Linux. That was not one of our concerns.
Okay, thank you.
Sure thing.
I just want to add one thing to that question. I would encourage you to go to Channel 9 and type Windows Subsystem for Linux. There are great videos from Seth, who talks to the engineering team where they describe the whole architecture of how it is done, how the API calls are passed through a lot of subsystems. And it's a really good architectural talk, and it will just blow your mind. Trust me on that.
One short question about the desktop bridge and Windows 10 on ARM 64. We know that the desktop apps will run on this ARM system emulated. So if we use desktop bridge, our existing 64-bit app and convert it with the desktop bridge and upload it to the store, we won't be able to run it in this future release of Windows 10 on ARM because it runs only 32-bit application emulated and it's impossible to run a 64-bit application on Windows on ARM. Am I right, or am I clear about my question?
We need to consult.
So we can answer that question. there's just some details in there that we are not sure what is public and what's not. So please hit me afterwards, and we can make sure that you get the answer that you need.
Sure, thank
we
you.
We just validate with our PR to make sure that we don't see anything we're not supposed to.
Okay, last call for questions. Anything came to your mind? Okay, it's quiet. So guys, I want to thank you and also want to thank the speakers for the questions. Yeah, big round of applause. Thank you guys very much.